I think for me, especially the last couple of years with COVID, with just adult life, I have lost some of that adventurous navigational feelings inside of me. And I feel like there's like a little bit of pride now that I went and I did this thing and I did it by myself. And now I know I can. And now I know I can even do something else. And that's pretty great.
Good morning and welcome to Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking. And today you have me, Alice Sheridan, and I have a guest with me, Kate Cosgrove. Kate, say hi.
Hi.
And Kate is joining from right down at the tip of Cornwall, but that's not where she's from. So we're going to talk a little bit more about why she's there, what she hopes to get from the experience, because we're going to be talking all about artist residences, which is something that I know absolutely nothing about, having never done one. So whether this is something that's on your bucket list or you're just interested in finding out about, or perhaps that it's something that maybe you can take some of the ideas that we might be talking about as the conversation unfolds, I'm quite interested in the idea of a residency perhaps that you can create for yourself at home. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit more about your background. I don't know how you describe it, but it's basically illustration for children's literature. And in one of the places you say, if Mr. Rogers had a baby with Cyndi Lauper, it's fun, it's lively, there's quite a lot of pattern, there's character creation in there. They're quite complex illustrations. Best way to go and find and see what Kate does is on Instagram, and her Instagram is K8, just the letter and the number Cosgrove. So go and have a look at her on Instagram and you'll see this beautiful work. Now, how did this all start for you?
Well, I have wanted to illustrate books for children since I was 9. We had this program at my school where it was called the Young Authors Program. And they would bring in actual illustrators and authors for school visits. And this illustrator came in and she was so funny and she was so amazing and her art was incredible. And I just fell in love and I thought that's what I want to do. So that's how it started.
So you did, what was your transition from school then and your training?
So I ended up going to art school after high school. I'm from Michigan. And so they didn't have an illustration program.
Right.
And then you get into the like adult, scary adult life. And they're like, how are you going to pay your bills? So I decided to do graphic design and do a concentration in painting. So I could kind of hit both that digital thing and also the fine art itch.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I tried to be a graphic designer and it was just so boring.
You know, you're speaking to an ex graphic designer. Oh, right?
No, I didn't. I mean, I love graphic design, but the work, the places in which hired me were, it was like an insurance company. And I did work for a zoo for a while and that was lovely. But ultimately, I just kind of kept going back to what makes me happy. And it's children's books are the one thing I collect. And I just, that's the world I wanted to be in.
So you were, once you'd realized that illustration was the route, you were quite determined that is the specific area that I want to work in. Because obviously, you know, some illustrators work across different fields, editorial, all sorts of things. But did you manage to get into book illustration? Because I can imagine that that's quite a hard thing to get into from like a starting point of zero.
It can be very hard. It's hard. Publishing is hard. And that's the thing is it's more about resilience, I think. And you just have to like, I mean, I think as artists, we face a ton of criticism in general, but like, you just have to be willing to like keep powering through. And it took me probably 15 years of working with clients and some self-pub authors who would contract me before I actually got something legitimately published.
Okay, so. Kate doesn't look old enough to have been working for 15 years. So there are other projects that came in first and then the book illustration. Now, the biggest thing has been the dirt book, which looks really good fun. What age group is this aimed at? Because, you know, if I had little kids, I'd be out buying this because this looks such fun.
Yeah, it's probably like 5 to 10 year olds, depending. Yeah. But I mean, you know, any age can enjoy, yeah, especially if you're into kind of nature-y type themes.
And what's your practice of creating, because you mentioned digital earlier, do you have an overlap between drawing and digital? How does it fit together for you?
So if you see my Instagram, I do a ton of pencil drawing,
yeah, just
cheap pencil on paper. And some of them, I like how graphically they look, but typically for publishing, you have to be able to resize things and, you know, make edits and things. So I'll take a photo of the drawing and then I'll redraw it on my iPad.
Okay, so you're using the pencil drawing first to kind of get that immediate response, mm-hmm, drawing response, and then you scan it and draw over the top in the iPad. So you've got what elements on different layers that you can change and adjust?
Yes, okay. Typically. And for a while, it was before iPads, it was vector. I drew with a mouse. And then now that the technology is changing so fast,
yeah,
with those programs. But I mean, I still traditionally draw with a pencil, yeah, you know?
Yeah, and nothing replaces it, does it?
No, and even on my iPad, I'm using pencil filters on a iPencil or whatever and drawing. Yeah.
That having to do things technically and digitally like that, is that a pact that you just think that we just have to accept that this is part and parcel of the way things are done and enjoy all the different areas that they do make our life easier now? Because they do. Like when I was at college, like we were used to do lettering and omnigram, I mean, like we learned how to hand typeset, you know. Yeah. So whenever anybody grumbles about the technical stuff or learning how to do the digital stuff, it's like, hey, do you remember when it was, you know, it was really hard. But I think we often have this push and pull between the digital and almost like a slightly rose-tinted spectacles about what it was like when it was just all hand done. But then we have this love-hate relationship with technology, don't we?
There are still people who are purists and will, yeah, just do like a watercolor book. And I've done some of that in my earlier years. And I mean, ultimately, then you have a client or a publisher or an editor who says, make this change, and you're repainting the entire thing over from scratch. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to, you know, it's a give and take with that, I guess. But there are people, I mean, I was actually visiting with my editor this winter, and she had a book that was going to be coming out where the illustrator worked just with cloth and like had sewn things together and done like a collage thing with cloth. And then she complained about how hard it was to get really good imagery for the publication from that because of the sizes and, you know, I don't know. So,
yeah. Well, it's that practical application, isn't it? And I think with illustration, you've always got, I mean, that's the purpose of it. There is an end result. There's a job it has to do.
Yes.
Which gives you some structure, gives you direction, but also, you know, from design days, you know, I remember, you know, we can love clients, we can kind of not like them quite so much too, but how long does it take? I mean, this is a complex relationship because you're bringing somebody's vision for the book alive. This is a big responsibility.
Oh God. And she never worked again. Well, that's why I really, really like working with a publisher,
yeah,
because they're like the middle, they're the middleman. That, yeah, they are the editor, your agent, are kind of like my author, I is the same author for both my Bullfrog book and my Dirt book.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not speak until after the Bullfrog book had come out.
Wow.
So we didn't even really have any contact. And now actually he's really sweet. He's in his 80s and I just adore him. And he sends me emails to check on me all the time. And I really like him very much. But I do think that separation is important, at least for me, because when I've worked with self-pub authors and they're so involved, it can be, it's no longer your vision as the artist and what you're bringing to the story. Mm. It's this other voice, you know.
Or it gets too personal and the publisher acts like a moderator and a mediator. Yes. And they're the one with the vision and you're both really interested. I mean, it's such a different scenario from, you know, working as an artist where you you get to do what you want and
look
and find your audience. It's a very kind of backward way of doing it compared to what many people listening might be thinking about. But I it's such a fascinating world. And I just remember, you know, when I was working as a designer, you know, choosing illustrators, commissioning illustrators, and also being really enviable that there was this place where you can be creative and make such beautiful things. But one thing I remember thinking at the time was, does it feel like a constraint that you're always asked to do things in a similar style for which you've already become known? Or do you feel like you can continue to develop and grow your art within that space?
I'm very much a process person.
Yeah.
So every single project that I work on is some sort of lesson or muscle strength for my brain. For me, I am excited to see how my style evolves.
Yeah.
And technology definitely makes it changes with that as well. But I just want to learn each time in each project.
Mm.
So for me, it's I don't get bored because I'm constantly trying to improve and I do a lot of art history research. So I'm always looking at other illustrators who came before me and trying out different things. So I think there is a way, I just like to see how it develops.
That makes sense.
And I feel like it's something, you know, like any type of art form as you develop as a painter or whatever, like it's exciting for me to see those phases and who influenced it, but it's still me.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it can't help but come out the way it comes out, but it's kind of nice to know that there's still that.
Yeah. And I mean, if you hire me like that, you have to kind of expect that it will be in that family, but it might be different each time.
Yeah, that's the creative contribution, isn't it?
Yes.
We normally have a little section that is, what are you working on this week? We're going to talk about why at the moment life is different for you. But in a normal week then, how does a normal week work? I'm guessing it varies hugely depending on what stage you're at. How many projects do you have on the go at once? And what does a week look like for you where you are?
I mean, I'll kind of just take what I can get. I'm a freelance person. Yeah. And I've been very lucky to have consistently, I usually have like one kind of in the hopper and one on my plate, and that's been great. And I hope that it continues.
Yeah.
So I draw every day. I probably do a fair amount of research just because it's my own interest too, probably every day. The internet has been amazing for tracking down like vintage illustrators, and I really like mid-century modern stuff, and there are all these women artists that I wasn't even aware of. And because illustrators tend to be more quiet, you know, quiet behind the scene artists. And so I'm constantly learning. So that's part of my day.
Are you a morning or a late night working person?
I have a 12-year-old.
Okay.
So I'm a whenever she's out of my hair kind of person. It's typically I get up with and get her on the bus 6 in the morning. And then I just have to, work all day. And then usually when she gets home, I'll kind of handle whatever drama is happening. And then I'm working till late. I mean, it's heavy criticism, it's low pay, it's crazy hours. And so you're pretty much, at least from my experience, doing it because you love it and you're obsessed with it.
I guess this is just why we do what we do, though, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, you get to the point where you can't imagine really doing anything else.
There's literally nothing else.
Right. And if there is something else, if you get an urge for something else, then it starts to become this little spark of like, oh, well, I wonder what if, or how I could develop, or maybe I could explore that. And it's just ongoing, you know, yeah. That who knows what it might be and what it might change into. Okay, so I said that we were going to talk about residencies. So you are currently in a place called Bryson's Vior.
Yes.
We think that's how you say it. Down in Cornwall, near to Penzance. And this is a cottage space. How long are you there for? How long have you been there?
I have to leave on Friday. I don't want to leave. I want to stay forever. Okay. I hope. By the time I leave, I will have been there 3 weeks.
3 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's a nice chunk of time to get settled in. I can imagine that it's almost like going on holiday. You know, a week is way too soon because you just get settled and find your feet and you've got to think about packing up and leaving.
Yes.
3 weeks is a nice chunk of time. Have you been very good with it?
I have. Yeah. I have. And it's, well, because for me too, I have a child. So over COVID, we've spent a lot of time together, and my husband is a high school teacher, so the three of us have spent a lot of time together. and I was telling my mom, I said, it's like I can't think my own thoughts,
right?
And for me, I'm a very quiet person and they're quite loud, and so I was a little bit worried to go to this like edge of England overlooking the sea by myself, and I worried a little bit that I would like be lonely, but I'm so in love with it there. Mm. And just the silence and the water and just the walks and the scenery and the time to think my own thoughts.
Mm.
And I've had trouble writing things for the last couple of years, and I actually started to kind of come up with some more stories of things that I would like to illustrate, and just I've been drawing every day. And then I have a project with a partner that I always have to kind of put on hold when I have a client, and I've really, really wanted to work on this picture book with him. So I've gotten to spend a little more time with that too.
It sounds, I suppose, and this is what I was getting at earlier, and I think we often talk on here about, again, this balance between doing things that we have to do and really feeling like, you know, sometimes you need to give things the space to develop and not rushing and not pushing things. And I guess that's where residencies really come into it. It's like I often feel that when you go on holiday, it's a chance to step back from your everyday life. Mm-hmm. And even if you're not there and not working, you see things differently. And because you're away from it, very often I find I make decisions about things on holiday because you're not in the nitty-gritty. Mm-hmm. Of there you go, there's a lovely expression for everybody, nitty-gritty. You can put that in your English slang library along with camps. Why did you feel a residency was a good fit for you right now? What were you looking for? Has this been something that's been on your mind for a long time?
Well, the joke is, it's over COVID, I just spent the entire time trying not to murder my family. Yeah. Because I work from home and they were suddenly in my workspace.
Yes.
And like I said, my work is an obsession, pretty much. I would categorize it as that. For me, I feel like my college did me a disservice. They never spoke to us of residencies, and I did not mm-hmm. really know it was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I was an adult and I was showing in a gallery, and I ran into a woman who's a photographer, and she had just gotten back from one in Upper Michigan. We have what's called the Upper Peninsula of the UP, and it's very, very woodlandy. And she had gone and stayed in the cabin in this natural forest and like done all of this photography work. And she was like, it's just wonderful. And all of these ideas, and it was just clarity. And I was like, I want to go to that. So I started thinking about it. And I really like to travel, and I did a study abroad in England, and I'm comfortable here. And so, and I really like the landscape and the vibe and just the people and everything. And so I started looking here, and there are lists you can get on that they'll send out like updates. And I found Bryson Vior, and I really didn't think, it's that imposter syndrome thing. I didn't think I could get in.
Mm.
And I thought, I just need to apply. Like, this will just be a big dream.
Mm.
And I'll just do it, and who knows. And then I kind of sat on it. And finally, I was like, the deadline is coming up. And I did it. And then Patricia, the trust manager, contacted me and said, I was trying to get in for next year. And she said, we have had a cancellation. Can you come in February? And this was January.
Wow.
and I said, I really want to.
Can I make this happen?
Yes. And so it just, everything, knock on wood, has come together. And it was a moment that I really needed, just spiritually, artistically, creatively. And it all just kind of came together perfectly.
Yeah, because the application process for this place, I was looking it up, it's applying. There are two deadlines in the year. So apply anytime up to the end of June if you want the residency in the following January to June.
Yes.
So you've got to be thinking quite a long time ahead. But when you were doing your research and looking for places to go, I can imagine that in itself is quite tricky. Were you choosing places dependent on location and scenery, or is the attraction really time with me, no distractions?
Kind of both.
Mm.
Just sort of, I wanted sort of a gut thing of what sounded most comfortable to me. And I am a pretty shy person and a pretty anxious person. And there was another one that I was looking at in UK that looks wonderful, but it has a lot of other, it's more of a community type residency situation. And I thought, I don't want to be around people right now. Mm. And so for me, it really was kind of the peace and the isolation aspect was very appealing. And I always said when I was a kid that I wanted to live in a lighthouse. And for the last 3 weeks, it's felt like I've lived in this lighthouse. It's been amazing.
So describe where you are for us.
I am in Cape Cornwall, and I am a mile walk from a village. So if I need groceries, I have to walk a mile there and a mile back, because I don't have a car over here, obviously. And I am literally the most Western building on the edge of England. And I am looking at the water all day long.
So no trees.
Nope, just sea. Sea, cliffs.
Wind.
Mermaid, sea monsters. It's the best.
And just things like, are you finding that it's affected your, I can imagine, your sleep?
Yes.
How has the rhythm been? Because you're coming towards the end of it now. And I can imagine that's, she's looking really sad. But I can imagine that there's a flow. And at the beginning, perhaps there's a trepidation and anticipation, and you've got to find all that stuff about local area, and it's in a new house, and maybe you don't sleep so good the first few days, and also maybe a sense of expectation. And then how has the flow changed a little bit?
For me, I do like to travel alone because I know that it's like I said, people make me anxious and their schedules mm-hmm. and timetables make me anxious. So I have to just kind of slow down and say, just do the next thing that you need to take care of. So like mm-hmm. even getting there for me coming from the States was difficult because I had to, you know, fly to a big city, change over onto another flight international. Then I had to get on a train in London, change the train a bunch of times, get on a few buses and get here. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of just had to keep that, like, just do the next section. And then before I left, again, anxious, I studied a ton of maps of the area, which was ridiculous because St. Just is very tiny, but I just wanted to make sure that I knew where everything was.
Yeah.
And, you know, so for me, that's that extra bit of planning is what kind of helped me not be anxious about it. And from go, I kind of let myself decide one of three things that I want to work on and go from there. And if I'm really not feeling it, like yesterday, I went down to the beach of the sea and just looked at rocks and poked some jellyfish that were dead. Like, you know, it took me back to being a kid. And yeah. I think that's the nice thing about this situation too, is it's very rural. You have isolation if you want it, but you're not like, there are people around if someone's trying to murder me, or, you know, if I fall off a cliff, someone's going to see it. And so there's that comfort, and I can kind of decide what I want that day, which is amazing.
Yeah. And that's the thing that we don't normally have time for, but like, as you're talking, I'm thinking, what would I do in that situation? And I think that there is a sort of a discomfort that you perhaps have to go through learning to trust yourself again. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how anxious I would feel without people around. And yet when you talk about going on a residency with other people working, and this was the same for me when I was looking for studio space, I thought it would be lovely to be in a studio space with other artists and things going on. The danger for me is I'd just spend a lot of the day hanging out, chatting, being quite involved in what other people are doing. Whereas when I go to my own space, because it's me and the Chinese takeaway guys and the guy who sprays kitchen cupboards, like there isn't any distraction. I've just got to go and get on with my own stuff. But when I think about a residency, I think there's the element of what's it brought to your work, which maybe we'll talk about, but there's also, it's this personal opportunity for adventure and learning mm-hmm. something about yourself.
Yes.
Because of the challenge of it, particularly in the traveling that you've had to do to get there, and in a new place and a new country.
And I'm walking all over, today, the trust manager let me come to her house for the stellar internet. And I walked a couple miles here, which I don't normally get that opportunity at home either. Yeah. But kind of like you were saying, when you're on holiday and you can think of things, or when people get ideas in the shower, like again, just like the walking is something that clears my mind. It's made me feel a lot stronger, which is really nice.
Yeah.
It's resilience of knowing that you can get there and do the thing, and also just the experience of doing it.
Feels quite emotional.
It has been. It really has been. For me, I was talking to some of the other artists here, and I'm staying there alone, but they were nice enough to have a coffee for me. And it's the word healing came up. It's a very healing quiet. And I have found too that I will turn off music and just like listen to the water or just listen to the silence. But there is something too about just sitting there with the window open, looking at the ocean. There's some connectivity there that is really quite remarkable.
Because there's no internet in the house and there's no TV, is there?
No, there's a TV with a wall of DVDs.
Okay, so you can be tempted and distracted if you want to, but...
I did purchase a hotspot so I can stay in touch with my family, but it is very similar to a dial-up experience, and I get out constantly and at different times. If it's windy, if it's rainy, forget about it. One day it was out for like 5 hours. So, I mean, there was a moment where I was like, huh.
What's it taught you about yourself?
I mean, for me, it's taken me, I'm 43. So like I'm of the old school stuff and the new technology stuff. Like I've lived in both of those worlds, and it really does take me back when I think about, like when I came here for my study abroad to London, we didn't have cell phones. Mm. So it's a very different experience to be here now with that. But at the same time too, it's still quite limited, and it helps me stay focused. And I think it just quiets everything down, and the noise cuts out. I think we just have so much noise from every which way in our daily life. And it's that really valuable, peaceful quiet and silence that I think we don't value enough.
And it's hard, I think, to overcome that just by, I mean, we can do a certain amount by willpower.
Sure.
Or, you know, determining things for ourselves. But A, there are always going to be things that come into it. And just, it's just that switching location thing, isn't it? Just so intrinsic to it. Have you noticed a difference to what impact has it had on your work, either that you can see now or perhaps the way you might approach things in the future?
Well, personally, just for my own sort of like an exercise to warm up for the day, I've been looking into some of the different mythology from Cornwall,
right,
and like the Mermaid of Zennar and different things like that. And so I've been researching that a bit and drawing some of that imagery. And that's been really fun. And I started thinking about like the old Mariner's sea monsters. And I started looking at the different fish that are in the area and sketching some of that. And so I think just from the nature aspect for me, and I have a lot of nature stuff in my work in general. Yeah, like that's definitely gonna stick with me. The plants, I've taken a lot of sketches, illustrations of plants. I went rock pooling, sketched a lot of the textures and creatures. I walk by this really long wall every day, and it looks like it's made of giant crooked teeth. And then in between the giant crooked teeth nest those giant snails that you guys have here that we don't have at home. And I'm fascinated. So I've been like drawing tons and tons of snails.
Right. Like,
I think I will always feel a connection to snails now. So from that like imagery, it's, you know, you can't stick your hand in a bucket of glue without some of it sticking to you.
Yeah.
Like I feel like this, I will carry this home with me, of course. But then for me also, like I said, I really, with my illustration, I do like to have little stories that go with them. And it's just to be able to like come up with stuff and imagine stuff again has been, I mean, that's really, I feel like I've cleared out some cobwebs.
And it's going to be something I can imagine that's going to carry on contributing in a different way, you know, for the next however long that you can't quite put your finger on yet.
I mean, and also Cornwall is so incredibly gorgeous that I've been talking about changing my identity and just hiding there forever. So that could also drastically change my future.
That would be a big shift. You might have to talk to your family about that.
They'll get over it.
So the being on your own thing has been, any other things that have been tricky, like knowing what materials to bring with you or that kind of thing?
That was stressful when I was packing, because I did know too, with all of the change, especially for me, a lot of people who are from the UK can just drive here and they, you know, whatever you can fill in your car, you can bring. But for me, I had to fit, you know, 3 weeks worth of clothes and supplies and figure out what I wanted to bring. And I had to also, I'm not a very big person, so to have to be able to manage those things on my own physically, from train to bus to train to walk, you know, all had to be considered. And I was quite nervous. I probably brought too many sketchbooks, but I was really worried about running out.
Well, it's got to be the right sketchbook, you know. Sometimes it has to be the right sketchbook for the right place, and you don't know what that's going to be until you get there, do you?
No, and then I ended up doing like a few things where I got like a little travel paint set, because I don't do a ton of painting, but sometimes I do. And I do a lot of paper cutting, so I thought, well, I'll bring my paper cutting stuff. But then when I got here, it's just not a paper cutting time for me. And I think the wind, there's too much. It just doesn't, it's not conducive for that for this time. Mm-hmm. So I don't need that. But for me, it is easier because I, you know, can just take a pencil and a pad and be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. What advice would you give to people if they were thinking, is there anything now about choosing that you would give advice to people? Do you decide, or do you think it's one of those things that you just respond to a gut reaction when you see a place?
I think especially for creative people, I think it's, can you see yourself? Like, how does it make you feel to imagine yourself in that place?
Mm.
And then, you know, and for me, I called my mom. I said, I feel like I'm in a dream. I feel like I manifested this whole crazy, like even the wacky little loft that I'm staying in, like everything about it is just right.
Mm. That's a powerful thing.
Except you guys have really massive spiders. I don't love that.
In the country, maybe. Yeah. They don't don't get blown away by the wind. I'm surprised in a way down there. What about the planning of, I mean, it's anybody planning their work, I suppose, it's going to be very different.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you're giving this an almost unqualified go for it stamp of approval. Have there been any downsides?
No, not for me. But again, I'm an introvert who likes to be alone. But no, it's probably the giant spider that I found in the kitchen is the only thing I wish wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But just bring lots of Band-Aids for your feet for blisters, because I've been walking all over.
Yeah.
I've loved every second. Beat me out of there with a broom, because I don't want to leave.
It sounds like it might be something that you introduce as a sort of regular, maybe not this one, but an element of this as a regular annual thing that you give to yourself as part of your creative practice. Can you imagine how, could it work to do it for yourself at home?
Not for me, just because of, I live in a city and I have a child, and she has autism. So she has a lot of very loud and interruptive sort of behavior sometimes for my personality. She's just doing her thing. To get away from everyone and everything was right for what I was wanting.
Yeah. I just wonder if there's a way that you can do it, maybe, you know, doing a house swap with a friend so that you get a different location or some element of it, or whether it just has to be all or nothing.
Yeah, I don't, I guess it kind of depends on what mode you're in.
Yeah.
And there are all, I've been on these lists for resident, like searching for the right residency for me. Cause some people, they want to go and they teach at them, or, you know, and they're all over the world. They're all over the United States. You just kind of have to decide what is speaking to you.
Yeah. Teaching for me feels like it might be in a little bit of opposition to what you're going for a residency for, because if you're there to spend this time with yourself, to see how the work develops, to think about what you might need to teach or show other people, is quite a contradiction to that state of mind for me when I'm hearing you talk about it.
That's, I selfishly wanted to just be alone with my imagination.
Yeah. Yeah, but I hear you're saying actually almost that there are so many different types of residencies out there. Were you surprised when you started looking at how much was available?
I mean, I've been looking for a few years, and they're just, some of them too can be quite intimidating. But again, I think we should just suck it up and apply to whatever feels right.
Intimidating in terms of the application process?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And that might just be a me thing. You're probably fine.
Well, I think anything that you do like this, I mean, I've spoken before, I put off applying for our local open studios for 3 years because I thought people were going to judge my work and say, no, you're not good enough. You can't come in. In actual fact, and I would, like, when they said, yes, okay, fine, you can do it, I was so thrilled. And then I found out that they say yes to anyone. And, you know, and I just thought, why have I waited 3 years in order to do this? Because, you know, you do it and you learn. And looking back, you think, oh my gosh, that was embarrassing. But without having done that, it takes you to the next stage. So I think it's, again, that's part of this learning, isn't it? You know, we say it's daunting, right? And then you just have to go, okay, well, just do it and apply. And if they have too many people and it's not me, it's not the right thing, or it's not the right time, there'll be something else.
Exactly.
You just got to open the lid, haven't you, on that box and start looking, really.
Mm-hmm. And just, yeah, just do it. Just be brave and do it.
And when a cancellation comes up for 3 weeks' time, say yes, even if it's in another continent.
Oh my gosh.
Can you believe you did that now?
I'm so glad that I did.
Yeah.
I feel like every time I have done something like that, it's worked out. So I need to maybe remember that. But it has been a whirlwind of a couple of months.
Yeah. I bet you're looking forward though a little bit, just a little bit, to going home and seeing everybody again.
Yeah. I miss kissing my baby's face, even though she hates it.
Well, thank you so much for taking what, as you say, what is, you know, some precious time out of your last few days there. I really appreciate hearing from you, and I think it is inspiring. No doubt there will be people listening who think, right, I've thought about that, but thought it's not for me, and now I'm going to go and investigate. So you've spread it on a little bit.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay, so we're going to put in the show notes, I'm going to give you a link where you can go and follow Kate on Instagram, see her work, find out what she does, and no doubt over the next few months we'll kind of see how some of the work and the inspiration from this time will kick in. I'll also put a link to Bryson's Viewer, and also Kate says that Art Alliance is the place to look for, so I'll put a link for that, and that's a kind of central hub for residences, so we'll make sure that all of those things are in the show notes for you to go and have a look at. So we usually finish on a what's inspired you. So given that everything has, can you think of one thing apart from the snails that you think has been a big learning for you, or that will have the most impact going forward from your time on this residency?
I think for me, especially the last couple of years with COVID, with just adult life, I have lost some of that adventurous navigational feelings inside of me. And I feel like there's like a little bit of pride now that I went and I did this thing, and I did it by myself, and now I know I can. And now I know I can even do something else. And that's pretty great.
That is pretty great. That is pretty great. Thank you so much. It has been lovely speaking with you and being introduced to your work and hearing about everything that you've gone through. And I hope we stay in touch. And
me
it has
too.
Been lovely.
Thank you. It's been so nice to meet you.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye, Kate. Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much for talking to me.
Oh, it's been lovely. What's your experience of English food been?
I am eating pasties from everywhere. Partially because of laziness, where I can just buy them and then heat them up. But I also wanted to try the different crusts and the different stuff. So I've gone to like 4 different pasty places.
And now you have your favorite. But it sounds like you're walking far enough to walk the pasties off, so that's good.
I am walking a lot.
And what about Cornish cream teas? And don't in that part of Cornwall, don't they have cream teas but on buns rather than scones?
I don't know. Oh, no.
Don't tell me you've been in Cornwall all this time and you haven't had clotted cream tea.
I have not. I didn't even know that was a thing until this very moment.
Right. Before you leave... Next walk into town, you need to find Cornish clotted cream tea.
Okay.
And there is this whole argument between Devon and Cornwall, what goes on first, the jam or the cream and then the jam.
Okay.
I can never remember. And the counties have a big kind of argument about which one goes first, and I can never remember which way is which, but you can't leave Cornwall without having cream tea.
I will do my best. I like all those things. I like jam. I like cream, so
yes. And I've got a link for Bryson's, how do you say it?
I think it's Bryson Viewer. I asked the one lady, I said, can you tell me phonetically, because I've only read it. And she said, I've been saying it with rhymes with bison, so
okay. And nobody's corrected you?
No.
That sounds good enough to me then. Okay, right, are you all ready to go then?
I think so.
Anything you want to check with me first?
How's your son's tooth?